This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 15th of February, 2022. Lots of back and forth overnight and this morning as we have fresh headlines coming out of the Ukraine-Russia showdown. Yesterday, a bit of craziness when the Ukrainian President Zelensky apparently said something about a specific date of Russian invasion, which was later spun as a sarcastic comment because he was supposedly making a bit of fun of the specific warnings on invasion timeframes. I guess that's what happens when you have a former comedian as a president. In any case, Russian TV showing some meetings between Putin and various ministers. It seemed to indicate a diplomatic tone. And there was even some news out not long before this podcast started that some Russian troops that were stationed in Ukraine would be returning to their base. I wonder if this is some kind of diplomatic overture as German Chancellor Scholz is in Moscow today to talk with Putin. In any case, we have a bit more of a risk on tone certainly coming into this morning. It doesn't mean it can't go back the other way if the next headline does not cooperate. And you can see the key levels on slide two. For example, we take the NASDAQ 100, which is the main index that had the closest scrape with that key support, the 14,000 area we've talked about. Big resistance is that 15,000 area where the 200-day moving average is. You can see how the various baskets performed. Interesting, the bubble stocks did quite well in relative terms in yesterday's session. All right. But I think that brings to mind, so yeah, let's say we clear away the geopolitical concerns that sort of the immediate cause of a lot of the spike lower late last week, especially on Friday, with these rather shrill U.S. warnings on Russian invasion timeline, etc. But then you're getting back to the whole rising yield issue, which is still affecting markets. So I'll tell you, we have you, our fixed income strategist, on the show today. Where are you focusing on for next steps? Are you focusing more on the short end or the long end of the curve when you're looking at what's happening next in sovereign yields?
Well, I'm looking at the yield curve at its entirety for the simple reason that the belly of the yield curve presents already an inversion between the 10 years and 7 year maturities. And it looks like the yield curve is going to invert quite soon between the 5 years and 10 years part of the yield curve. But an inversion in the belly of the yield curve sends a different signal. For example, when you look at the front part of the yield curve, and I'm referring more like to the spread between the 5 years and the 2 years and the 10 years and the 2 years. And the main difference is that a flattening and an inversion in the belly of the yield curve just shows that the market is positioning for a more aggressive Federal Reserve instead. An inversion in the front part of the yield curve, so the 10 years and the 2 years, especially when looking at it as a recessionary signal. And in slide number three, John, I put both the 30 years and 5 year spreads and the 10 years and the 2 year spreads. And as you can see, in the past few weeks, they've been flattening considerably. Now they are around 40 basis points, both of them. And the problem that we have with that is that the flattening will continue to happen throughout the year because obviously the Federal Reserve is building more aggressive. But what does that mean in terms of risky assets? Well, like we said, a flattening on inversion of the 10 years and 2 years might have consequences later in the future in 1 year time, but it doesn't mean that the flattening is not going to cause problems because a more aggressive Fed means also higher real yields that they pose a risk to risky assets.
Yeah, and among those credit, and I'll get to a question on credit in a moment. I know you've got some perspective there, but I think it's interesting. I've had this debate with some others recently and seen some comments out there, and I tend to agree with the idea that if the Fed is supposed to do this emergency intermeeting rate hike, the window is, you know, really was thrown open on Friday after the very hot Thursday CPI number last week. And it's maybe open for another couple of days, let's call it this week, especially if the Ukraine issue clears to some reasonably sizable degree. Otherwise, I think the Fed is losing a little bit the initiative again, unless we get something really clear in the FOMC minutes or if they're if they decide to wait for the PCE inflation data point, but that is not until next Friday, which seems a bit late to me because then you're getting almost within 2 weeks of the following FOMC meeting. But we can get to a sense of ease on the geopolitical front, but we still have to deal with these rising long yields. I'm just noticing the U.S. 10-year Treasury benchmark is actually closing above 204 basis points, and that's above the highest daily close. So the bond market very weak this morning. And talking about credit, I'll say we're seeing these credit spreads are still pretty compressed by historical standards, but not by post-pandemic breakout standard necessarily. So what's your perspective there?
Yeah, like since the beginning of the years, John, we have been commenting that the risk of rising rates has been perceived at a greater degree than credit risk in the corporate bond space, for the simple reason that bonds that carried higher duration, like for example, investment grade corporate bonds, have been falling faster than junk and lower rated credits. However, things are starting to change. And the reason for that change is that real yields are accelerated towards 0%. The 10 years real yields from minus 1.1% at the beginning of the year now is flirting with the minus 0.5% level. And as we see it rising towards 0%, we will see more weakness in the corporate bond space. And I'm going to take you on slide number 4 on the chart that you have on the right-hand side. As you can see, the taper tantrum of 2013 was caused entirely by the rise of real rates. And that's why they are a very important signal when looking at the possibility of a taper tantrum. Another thing that is indicating that things are changing in the credit space is the other chart that you see on the left-hand side that shows the spread between junk and investment grade corporates. As you can see, the spread is still contained between the two if we look at pre-pandemic levels. However, it's rising, and as it rises and breaks above 300 basis points, we're arriving at a point where it's a strong indication that investors are dumping junk to get into safer assets, so higher quality credits.
All right. And we've talked about the yield curve before, and as it flattens to zero, it's often considered a harbinger for the future. We have to remember the mere fact that the yield curve is flat or even slightly inverted does not necessarily mean anything in the here and now, because it tends to lead an actual recession by approximately a year to 18 months is the most common sort of time frame, even longer in some cases. But I was surprised when you put up this chart here on slide 5, I'll say, looking at the UK gilt curve, so the UK government sovereign yield curve, and it's almost already at zero. So it's quite interesting that we've already reached this phase so quickly. I guess that's also because the Bank of England is priced to do so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also because inflation in the UK is much different animal than, for example, in Europe and in the US, because we have a Brexit complexity combining also with the pandemic inflationary pressures. So the Bank of England has just started to be more aggressive, and will need to continue to be more aggressive. Today came out the job data out of the UK, and they showed a tight labor market. If tomorrow we have also strong CPI data, that would really build the image of an aggressive BOE that might hike interest rates by 50 basis points in March and not only by 25 basis points in March. So we are definitely in a danger zone when looking at the UK. And as we just said, also for the US, it is true that flattening or inversion of the yield curve is a signal of a recession in the future and troubles in the futures, but it also affects market sentiment in the short term when looking at risky assets. And we could see that starting off first in the UK, then, for example, in the US.
Yeah, and also interesting to see whether the sort of beginning of real quantitative tightening around the globe as at first the central banks allow assets to merely mature. If that does affect those long yields a bit more than has been the case so far. It has been just an incredible string of a brutal sort of yield curve flattening. I'm looking at the U.S. yield curve there. So yeah, very interesting stuff. And what we're seeing basically across markets is very interesting as well, because I think if you pull out one thing that's been quite compelling relative to the backdrop and pretty consistent is the bid in gold. And if I put a chart up on, I believe it's slide six of gold, just pull up a gold chart. You can see we traded above the big pivot high from November. And again, this big acceleration here, there's still tons of overhead resistance. There's a range going all the way back to, back to the pandemic year of 2020, extends all the way to 2075. Let's recall that the nominal US GDP, for example, is 50% larger than it was about 10 years ago. So a gold price now in terms of, you know, what is its monetary value relative to back then, has to be on a comparable level as well. So let's say the old gold high was $1,800-ish back in 2000. I think it was 2011, late 2011. That would be the equivalent of today, something like $2,700 if we were to get to those levels again. FX still trying to sort through things. I showed you the risk proxy Aussie yen on slide seven. You can see how it's been triangulating there. It was quite heavy this morning. The Bank of Japan offering unlimited bids for JGBs. Nobody was selling because the yields had sort of pulled back away from that level. Then we got the geopolitical news this morning, and Aussie yen is back bid again. It really is, I think, this pair showing that we're sort of trying to figure out our market's going to be able to sort of withstand this onslaught of the central banks tightening for now and continue to push higher again, you know, along the lines of a recovery that is continuing and is going to lead to more inflationary outcomes, commodity prices rising, etc. China overnight trying to do what it can to stem that development as they issued sort of a backhand against speculation in the iron ore market. It's been quite a run up, and that was that saw Chinese futures prices for iron ore smashed some 10% lower. This on the day when BHP, Billiton, the Australian mining giant, released spectacular earnings, biggest profit for 6 months since, I believe it was 2011, and a huge dividend, some $7.6 billion distributed to shareholders. So the majority of its profits being paid out to shareholders and rewarding them for that. And you see actually on the FX board on slide seven, you can see that the gold trend there is very strong, meaning that on average, gold is much, much stronger recently against all currencies. In terms of earnings today, not a lot of focus. I mentioned BHP. We've got Glencore, the big commodities trading giant. There's a lot of interest in the commodity space, so watch that one and what they're saying for their outlook. Airbnb, a speculative favorite, but you can see from the chart since its IPO has not been terribly inspiring. What are they saying about activity as we're opening up post-Omicron, et cetera? And some big names coming up. Still, we're most of the way through earnings season, but we've got a bit more than 25% of companies to go. Things like Albemarle tomorrow, a lithium-associated company. Cisco, a couple of semiconductor giants as well. NVIDIA and Apple, Applied Materials, and others. So look at that list there on slide eight. I'll tell you, are we looking for anything soon, or is there much anticipation around any of the sovereign auctions? I don't have the sovereign auction calendar up on today's slide deck.
Yes, we have actually a 20 years bond auction out of the US today, which is going to be in focus. Normally, 20 years maturity is not liked by market because it's a new maturity that was reintroduced during the pandemic. But in this case, the 20 years offers a pickup over the 30 years U.S. treasuries. So it will be interesting to see if it attracts demand, and that could put a weight on the long part of the yield curve, further flattening it, as we just commented earlier. So definitely. And on Thursday, we have also a 30 years TIPS auction that is going to be on focus.
Yeah, always interesting to see these auctions when you have the yield level at some sort of major cyclical high, which is what it's near right now as well. Also interesting on today's calendar, let's have a look at it on slide nine. We have the PPI data point for the U.S. Where we are expecting it to fall back, ex food and energy, to 7.9% year on year and 9.1% for the headline. So we're getting a little bit of a tail off in terms of the headline figures. Likewise, the key global inflationary gauge, the Chinese January PPI, up in late trading tonight and Wednesday session in Asia. Often a leading indicator together with crude oil for inflation. So be watching that. That one also pulled back in the prior month. And let's see if it's pulling back further. A couple of the data points there, I think for Fed watchers, of course, there's always the potential. The thing is fading somewhat of an intermediate move, but stay tuned for that. That could obviously have tremendous impact across markets. But we have the FOMC minutes up tomorrow and a couple of Fed speakers for the balance of the week. And we're getting pretty tired of hearing Mr. Bullard speak. We need to hear from Fed Chair Powell himself or from the Fed making an emergency move, I think, to have real impact here. Okay, let's call it a day for now. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.